My name is Aram, my pronouns are he, him, and welcome to God's Fall.
My name is Matt, my pronouns are he, him, and I'm playing a level 1 character.
When we last left Sigma, he had shown the Sun Elves the extent of his divine powers, and cowed even his most ardent detractors. They fell to their knees around him, and for the first time the Illithid felt true worship, empowering him as nothing ever had before. Oris's sister abandoned her plans for revenge and devoted herself to Sigma, preparing the other scouts for a long trip across the Torahora Desert.
Right at me.
Yeah.
I'm going to look right at her too. I almost want to do detect thoughts, but
sure.
I don't. I want her to tell me. I want her to say, I don't want to read her thoughts. I want her to read her thoughts to me. You know what I mean?
Right. You want to think
her thoughts to you. Because so far I go directly to like, don't even tell me lies. I know what you're thinking.
Sure.
That kind of a thing. No, I want you to... So I level with, I don't. I do not level with this food, but I look at this food. I almost do.
Right.
Sigma, confused at this moment, I look at this food in its face and I gargle forth.
Why are you afraid of me?
Do you say it out loud?
Yes.
Okay. So do you know how Illithids speak? Basically, I mean, that's what they... But they can mimic human sounds. They can mimic common and elven and everything. Mm. And they can do it by, according to Volos, they put their own tentacle down there. So they jam a tentacle into their own throat and curl it back as a mimicked tongue.
Oh,
so if you want,
amazing.
So you could speak in this like horrid, you know, deep, terrifying speech, but it'll sound like common to them.
Okay. I'm going to do that then.
I'm going to roll... will say okay, so she is more frightened and is like you know, her jaw is clenched, her eyes are locked open, sweat is beating on her forehead, and she's gagged.
Mm-hmm.
She's not blindfolded, just gagged, and her hands are in front of her, bound to this ring, so she can't move.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, there is terror in her eyes, but she still is managing not to look away.
Okay, kind of confused and almost shaking my head, like, why would I even do this experiment in the first place? Cancel this whole thing. I do my routine where I kind of shake my head. I remove the tentacle from down my slimy beak, right, which is gross.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I just look at her in the face and say,
you have failed your people. You have failed to stop Sigma.
And then I scratch her scalp with my unhinging jaw and suck out her consciousness.
She's from a town to the south, and that south town is Avanos. It is just north of Capena, and it is a rich farming town. There's a bend in the river, and there's a deep flood plain, and there is riches of rice and corn and other harder vegetables, wheat, things like that, to be
dog food, animal food.
Right, food for the dogs who feed you. Yes, exactly. Yeah, and so that's where she lives. And she was trading at the time. There's some like extra details you don't care about, but like,
great to the labyrinth.
Her you know, spouse passed away, and like there's all these like extra details coming out. You're like, okay, whatever, labyrinth.
To the labyrinth. I've got enough to kind of contemplate. And one bit that Sigma does contemplate, and kind of going back to that experiment, why are you afraid of me? Who? Because Sigma has never, again, he doesn't have a will of his own, or he doesn't think he was birthed from the will of his own, but his will is to conquer.
Right.
So he has never been an individual.
Right.
He doesn't know what that is.
Right. It was conquer. Right.
In quotes, yes.
Right. Because in his mind, it's just the community. It's like,
does an ant colony
think it's conquering? And even if it does a coral think it's conquering? Because corals expand and fight and push at the edges. I mean, is it just making room for itself?
Right. So this is a side effect of taking a hive mind creature and running the software of an individual on it.
Mm-hmm.
And it is conflicting, contradictory, mixed Sigma. Confused, doesn't really like it. I know that Sigma can do it, and for a minute there's the temptation to try to summon forth this woman, or maybe the raider, or maybe the dwarf, to try to take on the form. Maybe it'll be different, but really Sigma knows it won't be. They're all lesser creatures. They're all to be tamed. It's lonely being the king.
It is, especially because it's being exposed to you, because there's been the now you've experienced brother sister bonding. You've experienced
and for a minute,
elder respect.
I wonder if all the gods feel this way.
Right? How do they all feel? What are they? Are they all just you? You were raised believing you were a god. You were god of this world. Was it something bigger? Was your world just preparation to be a god? And to be planted, so are all of them like you?
No sleep that night.
Yeah, right?
Right.
Fuck. Goddamn existential crises. Being god is hard. As soon as the sun dips below the ridges of the mountains above you, they're loading up the giant... Actually, you know, they wouldn't bring them down. They would load those bitches at the top.
Mm-hmm.
So outside of the community, already in the sand, you hear a couple, I guess, laughing howls of the hyenas, because they have that weird laugh.
I can't wait to hear that on the podcast.
And it'd be like low and guttural, so I have to like up to dip
giant.
In.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that's terrifying.
All right, so up there, yes, I can hear the laughing of the... That's good.
So you are met by Azari, who comes to your chambers. And again, I mean, you have worshippers, but Azari is just...
He's the number one.
Yeah, he buys into everything.
Right. He's the altar boy.
He purposely tries to spend time with you. Just like wants to be around you. Just like any moment they can spend assisting you, doing anything, is beneficial to them. So where they would normally send a page to help you with your desert gear and, you know, gearing up, you know, he's there adjusting your shin guard himself, you know.
We're talking about the armor that these people have, because, I mean, they're in the subterranean lair. So
correct.
They're from these creatures that come from the lake or the aquifer, right?
So think of like manatees, but like underground cave manatees, right?
Gross.
Yeah. So like this huge... So this water that seeps out of the walls to the east and, you know, forms a small waterfall as it gathers in this deep pool, that water goes down and down and down, way down into these subterranean gigantic lakes. And some of them pop up and have pockets of air,
right?
And are clearly fed and have exits to air to somewhere else.
Right.
And so these like underground manatees formed where they're translucent and blind, and they pop up to breathe and go back down, and they chew this like bioluminescent kelp. So there's this glow about them. And so they are, you know, killed, dragged to the surface.
And that's what you do if you're a guard, if you're going to be part of, if you're going to be doing combat, that is part of the initiation.
Oh,
You've got to go down.
Swim down and get one.
Get one, come back. So the armor that I would wear, just for technical purposes, is medium armor.
Yes.
proficient.
Yeah, because it's actually, because unlike normal manatees where it'd be hide, they actually have scales. So they're kind of like snake manatees.
Or almost like pachydermis skin is how I imagine it. Almost like an elephant skin, right?
Kind of like flaps of it, right?
Yeah,
so it's
like
thick and not quite hide, like more armor-like. So
it's
you
almost
have this,
like the scales of like a Gila monster.
Yeah,
that's how I imagine it anyway.
So I would
say, off on a thing.
But it's unbelievably light. Because they have to be, you know, don't have neutral buoyancy, right? So it can't be heavy to weigh them down. So it's very, very strong, but very, very light. So I would say that you have a scale mail, right, that has the properties as if it was mithril. So it's half the weight, right? And it's slightly magical. Not enough to give it a plus one, but enough to give it more of a, like, it will wear as quickly. You know, it can't be damaged as easily, that kind of thing.
Okay. All right, so I have my AC written down as 13 for armor and then plus 2 for a shield if I were to don this stuff.
Yes.
But I'm not going to don it until we get to the ruins of Sephar.
The shield, by the way, how that happened, and we didn't play this, but I'll just kind of write it in as like a little side picture. So as you were training with Oris's sister, Osinia, right?
No.
Damn it.
Osonia.
Yeah. As you're training with Oris's sister, Osonia, eventually, you know, she had you training against some of the younger scouts, but eventually picked up a sword herself. And what, you know, once she saw that you were comfortable enough in this body, that you had enough of her brother's reflex memory, right? She went after you. And you guys fought for a while, and she got a little more aggressive than you expected. And as her club was coming down, she was using, you know,
blunt weapons.
Yeah, right, exactly. As her club was coming down towards your face, your arm went up and this shield appeared. It's almost as if, like, it looks like to her, the flesh of your arm opened up and this inky blackness kind of just like, just kind of flowed into the air as if it was water and then solidified into the shield just as she struck down.
And I'm ready for the journey to the ruins.
Oh, yeah, you are. And your paladin abilities are now manifest. You don't know what they are.
Level four.
Yeah, you wouldn't call them being a paladin. You would just call them being a god. They're really no different to you than any of these other abilities that you're manifesting.
Conquest paladin in my own name.
You worship and conquest in your own name.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. All right. So you guys are all dressed up, I suppose, and setting out. There's you. There is Azari. There is Osonia. Right? So there is the captain of the guard, of the captain of the scouts, the lieutenant of the scouts, because she has now taken her brother's place, and nine others. And these are the best ones. She immediately assigns two of them to break off and to head towards Abasti.
With that tax money or whatever.
Sure.
To gather or purchase anything we might need from there in order to fortify the ruins of the ruins of Sephar, because I want to use that as a base of operations for a couple reasons. One, to keep our home of Vyaduid a secret, and also because it's going to be close enough to launch raids. But I don't want to be openly aggressive against Abasti right now, because, I mean,
there's 10 of you.
We'll conquer them eventually, but I mean, I'm a bloodthirsty warlord, but there's an order of operations here.
Are you bloodthirsty? Are you a warlord?
Well, according to the tenets of the conquest paladin, I guess I'm not bloodthirsty. I am a conqueror.
Yeah.
Yes.
But what is a conqueror to you? A conqueror is just, to you, probably just an establishment of order where there is chaos. This is all just chaotic. This is all just so disorganized and so messy.
Yeah, I'm making right what was wrong in my own eyes, which is, again, to bring the Sun Elves back to their original home.
Yes,
to bring
them where they belong.
To restore order, right?
Yeah.
So what I want these...
on the backs of those who they should be subjugating. That's just, again, it's just natural for you.
It's a natural order.
Right.
Anyone who resists it is just wrong.
They're just wrong.
They're
You're
just wrong.
Right, they're going against nature.
Yes, they're going. Yes. They're going.
They're an abomination. Yes.
So yeah, I want scouts to go to Abasti in order to, with that tax money, to purchase anything that we may need in order to. And I trust them.
Yeah. To basically set up camp in the ruins of Sephora? Is that kind of the idea you're going
yes,
for?
Yes, and we're going to fortify. I mean, because if I'm going to use that as a base of operations, I don't want to have to go back to Valladolid. I don't want them to go back to Valladolid.
Nor do you want to strip them of resources. It makes sense.
So what I want to do is I want to look for any oases along the way or any forms of life. I want to use my life detect abilities if I can.
Yes. I'm glad you bring that up.
Because this is 10 miles out at this point.
Yeah, so at this point, I mean, I think the cat's out of the bag. Mm. So you are the demigod of life. Now, you don't know that yet. Right. But you are the demigod of life. You are the arisen
god of life.
I'm so used to playing Rise.
It's okay.
You are the arisen god of life. So, and one of the first things you can do as the arisen god of life is sense life. And now within, how far the distance did we say?
At fourth 10 level? Miles at fourth
yes.
level.
Yes. So at 10 miles, you can sense life. And, well, like, if there was like a human being at 10 miles, like you might get the faintest little blip. It might even be hard to tell from
like
background.
Is that a rat or is it?
Yeah, what is that? Or is that anything at all? But if there was an oasis with life surrounding it and life depending on it, right? So it's not just the being there, but the intent, right? Mm-hmm. And oasis is vital. Easily, you can pick them up. So as you all are moving, their scouts know of some of these things. They have mapped out some of these things around them, but they haven't gone too far out, right? And as they're getting to the edge of what they know after about a week of travel, and you have one more week to go, as they're getting to the edge of what they know, you're picking out things that they never knew. And they don't understand how you're doing it, but you're always right. And so you're able to, like, every couple days hit some sort of oasis or large field of cacti that have water within them. And you're always able to lead your people to food or water
almost
or safety.
Like
your hand goes up and you think, okay? And you think of, like, wanting to find an oasis, and, like, two tentacles go up. Mm-hmm. And they're kind of like hang like diving rods. And as soon as you get near water, no, I'm kidding.
That'd be great. Like a dowsing rods.
It does not happen, but yes, that'd be awesome.
That would be awesome. I levitate up in the air and spin like a compass.
This way.
Now, what I want to do with that information is once I get to the ruins of Sephora. So this is kind of a complex plan, but I wrote it out. What I want to do is everybody's going to the ruins of Sephora except for the two that split off to Abasti to get some stuff.
Yes.
And that stuff is going to be, you know, any tools we might need in order to fortify, any beasts of burden we might need, to food we might need, slaves that I'm going to need to eat because I don't want to eat my own here. So I'm going to buy a couple of slaves.
Fair enough.
Because slavery is fine in Rizon.
Well, I mean, slavery is legal in Rizon.
Is legal in Rizon.
Yes. Everything is, anything about any debasement for money is legal in Rizon. That is how Rizon exists. Money is superior to humanity.
This cult of metal is a mysterious thing. So I want that. And then what I'm looking to do is use these oases as a point to just to gather from. So when we're staying at the ruins of Sephora, we don't have to go all the way back to Valladolid in order to get anything back.
You want to kind of set up here, depending on what's already there.
Depending on what's there.
You want to bring a bunch of supplies and wagons and like larger creatures that could carry these things as opposed to these hyenas, which are decent and fast and can help you defend, right? Mm-hmm. And also guard the camp at night. And so when you've been, you know, setting up, they kind of patrol. Also, there's elves to watch you too. But like, they're not as useful for carrying a bunch of supplies for a long-term thing. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then, like I said, a couple slaves. That's good.
All right. So at the first week out, right, you find a particularly large oasis they did not know was there. And it is gorgeous and lush and just surrounded on all sides with such thick vegetation. You can only really approach from like the north, and you kind of come down like right on top of it. And it is just filled with this crystal clear water that is surprisingly deep. And the elves around you are joyous at finding it. They consider this another blessing.
Fantastic. Okay, so when we fill up our jugs or water skins or whatever it is.
The sun is coming up.
Oh, we're going to camp.
So it's a good
here.
Time to find it. So probably a good time to camp here.
Okay, we are going to camp here, yes.
They set up this, they've been like collecting, as you've hit different oases, you've noticed the elves have been collecting pieces of wood. And at this one, they've managed to form, and you know, it's basic, but right at the edge of the water, they've formed a throne for you.
Good. I sit in the throne.
Who are you right now?
I am Sigma.
Okay, excellent. Azari and Asonia approach you as you sit and begin to wash your arms and legs and feet from all the sand and dust of the day.
Great, I let them do it. No. I let them bathe me if they wish.
You can feel their joy. Like, they are sold at this point. They are true worshipers.
I've led them to oases in the desert. I mean, what else do they want? I've given them an eternal life. You're welcome, guys.
They're 100% on board.
You're welcome, guys.
And they're also your advisors. So, like, as they're going through the task of washing the sand from you, right? Yeah. They're also telling you how they're doing, how they're tracking, where they believe they are in the desert, and how they believe that their time is going well.
Yes, good.
All the plans so far seem to be going as planned.
With every day, I gain more strength. Good. We will get to the ruins of Sephor in...
About a week.
In about a week.
Which is right when you'll really need to eat.
I can last until then, but know that my hunger grows. I do not want to send one of you to heaven early.
No. So, as you say that,
I don't want to send you to heaven.
No, I like that. I like that. It's kind of like a Han Solo movement. You're like, yeah, we're fine. How are you? Are you well?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Oh no.
I don't want to send you to heaven. So, as you say that, Azari, like, they're both into it. Like, they go, you know, but. Asonia, there's more of a, like, almost a longing, because she knows her brother is there.
Is there, right.
And she could spend eternity with them.
Right.
And they were twins, so they were very close. And whenever you're with Asonia, like, even now as Sigma, as you feel her hands kind of go up your arm and gently and lovingly wash the sand from you, there's a connection there that's different than the others.
Mm-hmm.
And that... You understand what it is, and you know it's the same feeling as when you wear her brother.
Yeah.
But it's also different. Mm. It's also like it's as if there was a connection that reached through you to touch him.
I don't want to be caught up in these weird base animal emotions anymore. So that's cool and everything, but I'm going to say...
Enough.
I can...
Can we stop?
I'll finish.
Step backwards.
If there's anything left I've got to wash, I'll wash it myself. And to rest easy, make sure that the hyenas are fed and watered. The scouts know what they have to do in order to make it work.
They know it. Absolutely.
They know how to make it work. As long as we are fed and watered and ready to go... Gosh, we're going to have to try to sleep through the day.
Well, you guys have been doing it so often. I mean, this is the week, so you've been doing it, yeah.
Right, okay, so we're going to...
This is a great place.
We're going to zip up our body bags
the vampire time-traveling cyborgs
that we
are. At some point, guys, I have to have a side conversation with you about a vampire game I was in with Michael for like 7 years. But yes, vampire time-traveling cyborgs.
Yes.
However, no, you have, in fact, this is probably the best place you have rested because there's shade. There's trees above you, wide leafy palms.
Mm.
So, and there's a foliage on the ground that's just as thick and, you know, leaves the size of your body that you could easily lay beneath.
I mean, I have to rest for the whole time and I know they only have to meditate for 4 hours. Mm-hmm. I just want to know. And I mean, what would they do during the 4 hours I'm resting?
Well, they resupply themselves. They comb out the fur of the hyenas. They make sure they're watered. They all cook for themselves and eat. They rest and talk and plan. And also, they guard you. So while you sleep, I said to you, there's a small tent for you or whatever, because they can't be that fancy. But they set up in the best area and they set up in the most shade. And they move the industry away from you that they're doing, so they don't bother you. But in addition to that, at all times there are two guarding you. Okay, so at all times there are two awake and guarding you, and two meditating on either side of you, turned inwards.
Okay.
So they are looking after your physical and spiritual being at all times.
Wow. Yes. Good. Didn't even think about that.
They did.
I mean, I thought about it. I'm a god, of course.
We did it, but you wished it and we knew, my lord. We are here at your beck and call, therefore everything we do is your desire.
If there's anything I can do before we head out again for the next week of travel, what it's going to do is try to focus on my magical abilities, my innate abilities.
So your divine abilities.
Right.
So what are your paladin abilities up to level 4?
My paladin abilities up to level 4?
Sorry. What are your divine abilities as the god of life up to level 4?
Okay, so I get the life detect ability.
Right.
The cure wounds ability as detect poison and disease, and then immunity to poison and disease.
Okay, so while you're sitting in this chair and resting, you hear some commotion off to the side.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of like lazily look over. It's like, what? And you see a large boar that is limping and looks confused. And some of the elves have like stepped back from it and they have spears out, but they're not approaching it and they look concerned.
Hmm. Okay, I want to... I'd like to life detect that mof. I want to see what's going on if I can. Roll insight. Is that what you want me to do?
I mean, I don't think you have to.
Okay.
But you know, go ahead and roll medicine, actually.
Okay, medicine. That's
with
pretty
advantage.
Weak. Okay.
Because you're using this life force thing.
Okay, 3 plus whatever my medicine's going to be. It's going to be pretty weak. So 7.
Okay, you don't know what's wrong with it, but it's... But there's something.
It's also the first time I've ever seen a boar, any type of life. Like
it's
this.
The first time you've ever seen disease. Disease doesn't exist in your world.
Oh,
it doesn't exist. Why would it?
Right. So this is something new.
Yeah. So this thing is heavily diseased, and like you can see, like there's exposed parts of its flesh that look like there are wounds that are old and weeping and aren't healing, and there's maggots in some of the wounds, and it's all horrible and upsetting, but you don't understand any of it. It's just utterly repulsive.
And the maggots look like extra life, so I'm like, life is coming out of this thing.
Right,
that's
right.
Weird.
Life is existing in this
infection.
And that word comes to you from one of the others. And it's a confusing word, and the imagery that it's associated with is very confusing.
What is infection?
Azari is there right away. And like looks at you. Oh, my lord, it is rot. It is a contamination of the flesh.
Mm. I'm gonna turn into Enid and try to plumb this to try to get a better idea. Maybe I have like a school nurse photos. Maybe some kind of
Enid spent centuries as a healer, and used to be a cleric. Used to cast healing magic. Understands it. And as soon as you become Enid, you feel this well inside you.
Mm-hmm.
You reach out, you're almost not understanding what you're doing. You reach out your hand and this glow appears in the palm of your hand, and then a glow appears in the creature's eyes and its side begins to glow and the wound fills in with this crackling kind of wetness, and a little cry comes out from the pig, and then it's like, it's something more aware and more conscious, and then it like lets out a little squeal and goes running off into the underbrush.
Fantastic.
Azari is on his knees. Everyone who just saw that are on their knees.
So it was like cure wounds.
That was cure wounds.
Cure wounds, yes. Yep. Involuntary,
and
yes.
And again, this is a society that hasn't seen magic in 120 years.
Yes.
Yeah. But Enid understood, because Enid casts cure wounds all the time.
Mm.
So Enid was able to access what you can do through your flesh, but his memory was what let you do it without any effort whatsoever.
Very cool. Rise, that's fine.
And they do rise slowly, but like not out of fear.
Mm-hmm.
Like this, like what you just did was a beautiful miracle. This didn't, like most of the stuff they do is like mostly out of worship, a little out of fear.
Mm-hmm.
There's no fear this time.
Yes.
There's only love and amazement. There's only joy with you. Even, and you do stand as Enid in front of them.
I look to Azari and say,
cut your palm lightly.
And Azari just pulls out a knife, looks you straight in the eye, and just cuts.
I would like
his
to
palm.
Use lay on hands and would restore that back.
Azari just shudders as you grasp their hand, and you see this like light flow into their arm and their forearm and their palm, and as your fingers slide back over his palm, he's fully healed. And there's tears in his eyes, just tears of joy, and his arms are up near his face, and he's just trembling.
Dry your eyes, my warrior.
Instantly.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I shall cut my tear ducts out. I shall never cry again. And so the village is kind of like you know they've learned now that, you know, not to stay in Gok, that you mm-hmm. that you like the worship and you like the reaction, then get the fuck back to work.
Right.
And
there's time for it. Right. Sure. Just don't spend all day fawning over me. That's great and everything, but we have a job. We're supposed to be this worthy, wonderful people, and I'm going to lead you in everything, but guys, we got to do it.
And usually how that works out is that in these moments, like, you'll be left standing there for a moment, mm-hmm. contemplating, and they'll just all go back to what they're doing, and mm-hmm. half a minute, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, you may not move. You may just stand there and think,
yeah,
and then just continue on with what you were doing.
Right. That's kind of how I'm doing it, too. Like, this ability happens. Like, let me think about this for a second. That's consulting the voices, I guess.
And you feel so safe that you can just be utterly immobile in front of them and not worry at all because you know that all of them are there to die for you.
Yes.
I have this magic power. As I was birthed from the tree, like a tree heals its wounds, I can heal the wounds of others and maybe myself.
There's like a temptation, like
there's a temptation to be like
your fingers kind of like like just walk up to Azari, cut me,
right?
The absolute terror.
That
to
would
face.
Be a Vessin moment. Yeah. I can't do that.
Do it. No, I would say that, you know, for you, your hands, you like your fingers kind of like glide over this dagger that you've been mm-hmm. given, right? You just like you just kind of gently finger the edge, and there's a danger to the edge of a knife, right? Mm-hmm. But for you, in this thought, in this belief, in this idea that you can just heal yourself, that danger is something so very different. Mm. And now so dangerous, but in such a different way. Much like all these other emotions feel so dangerous, yet so enticing. That's kind of how you feel about that.
Oh, the psychopathy is bubbling up. We're rested.
Oh, I would say so. The day goes by, right? And you have done your sleep, like you have woken mm-hmm. up from your sleep, and the day is now turning into evening. So by the time you kind of come out of it, mm-hmm. right, the sun is now just falling, like the rocks in the sun sets in the west. The rocks in the west are glowing red.
On Earth, they do. In Calgon, it's whatever
they have
you
to.
Want.
They got to. I can't make it different. Like I bought this program to map out, it basically maps out how a solar system works, and it shows you the math, and it recreates it as a model, and it is supposedly to help you understand it. And so I thought, okay, I'm gonna make an Earth-like planet, make a sun, and I'll make one extra moon.
Oh, you told me about this.
And it was so confusing and so difficult and so complex immediately that I was like, you know what, F this, I'm just gonna make it just like Earth.
Yeah, you even brought in your own time scale too.
Yeah. Well, that was dumb, but yeah, I mean,
it wasn't. I thought it was cool.
I just wanted to round it all off, right? So instead of a 7-day week, it's a 6-day week. Each month has 5 weeks, 6 days, 5 weeks, 30 days, right? There are 12 months, 360. Done. There's nothing special. There's not little tendrils coming up and down.
Right.
Like this month is longer. This one. No, it's 12. It's 12 of them. They're 30 days each, and that's it.
I like that. Yeah. It's clean. It's concise.
It's simple. There's not 2 days off a week. It's 1 day off a week. So I named your scouts.
I'll write it down.
So actually, I got to get rid of one of them because
Barry, Larry, Terry, Jerry, and Gary. Yeah,
No. So Sigma travels with Azari and
Asonia.
I have to run to write that down.
And then Jerry, Barry, Larry, Terry, and Gary.
Yeah.
And Huey, Dewey, and Louie.
Yep. Yeah. Asonia. And 10 and 9 scouts. And 9 other scouts. Okay. Mm-hmm. Sigma travels with Azari, Asonia, and 9 scouts under his banner, each running a giant hyena. A pair of scouts were sent ahead to Abasti in order to secure food and supplies for Sigma. Your scouts' names are Talindra, T-A-L-I-N-D-R-A,
mm-hmm.
Viron, Siron.
I pledge my allegiance, my master.
That's right. Lethoniel.
They can never corrupt us again.
L-E-T-H-O-N-E-L. Pyra. P-Y-R-A.
P what?
P-Y-R-A.
Okay.
Galen. G-A-E-L-I-N.
Uh-huh.
Rolim. R-O-L-I-M. Saria. S-A-R-I-A. And Lorsan. L-O-R-S-A-N. Lorsan.
Yes.
Those are your nine scout elves.
By the nine.
By the nine. And then, of course, you have... you've been riding with Azari and Asonia for a while. And Azari is competent, right? He's naturally physically gifted, and it seems to make him lazy. Like, he's impressed with his own abilities. And he's good. Don't get me wrong. He's a good rider and a good fighter and a good scout.
Mm-hmm.
But he's nothing compared to Asonia and this laser scalpel sharpness that she has and how careful she is and how much care she takes and how aware she is at any given moment. How mm-hmm. she's very, very hard to distract, unlike Azari.
Okay.
So you can kind of see maybe it wasn't worth killing him, but you can kind of see where Asonia was coming from, as in, like, he's the weak link. If there's going to be a weak link in this chain, it's a little weak around him.
I mean, it's fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to kill him.
Right. No. That's like you should. I'm just saying that you're able to kind of see where her viewpoint is.
Right, yeah. Okay.
All right. So after that, after the night of after the day of you resting and then them praying for you and you casting magic for the first time and
yes.
reaching into this divine pool of magic you seem to have with the help of Enid. Why can't I do it?
That's okay.
So with the help of Enid, you're able to tap into this magic that he had known centuries ago. You're able to tap into it and cast it with ease. And that was your first spell. And those spells come from a well of magic within you. You pray for your spells. You didn't really realize you were even doing it, but you pray for these magics. Would you pray at dawn or at dusk?
Let's see. We are nocturnal people, so I would pray at dusk then. So the beginning of the sun elf day.
Yeah. Okay. So the beginning of your day, which is at dusk. So when you wake up, you pray at dusk, and I pray to myself. Right. No, you definitely. Who else would you pray to? Of course.
I swear an oath of conquest to myself.
It's really meditation, right? Mm-hmm. More than it is prayer. It's like you and your own thoughts. Mm-hmm. So you sit there with your own thoughts and you contemplate your day and you focus your energies and therefore you gather these magics to you. You hone and shape your divinity into these tangible magics that are then at the ready. Yes. For you to use in the day or the night.
I will continue to decipher and make it easier.
Excellent. All right, so you've gathered those all to you. You have prayed and rested. They have gathered most of the supplies up from the oasis, and it's now about a week from what they're reckoning to the Temple of Sephor.
Okay.
All right. So you head out. Now, as you head out, you are riding down, and you know that this temple, there is a path from the main road that has not been used in many times. You guys are coming at it from the north. So you're just traveling over sand dunes to reach it. While the wagons, assuming there are going to be wagons, mm-hmm. should be able to get on the road, and it'll probably get there either when you're there or soon after you're there.
Yeah, the wagons are going to come from the town.
Correct. So they'll go south on the road mm-hmm. and probably at some point either be approaching you or being parallel to you, right?
Right.
And then they'll hit a path and then they'll travel west inwards to meet you.
And then by the time I'm there, I'm really going to need some food.
Hopefully you'll be hungry.
Hopefully they'll bring some slaves. I might have to take a point of exhaustion or two.
By the time you get there, you'll be hungry. Every day after that, you'll start taking points of exhaustion and just staring at these lovely elves who would happily give up their delicious brains, you know? Yeah. As they're like all cowed around you, washing your legs,
right.
washing your arms, and so close at the scent of their brains.
And I mean, I could really, and they would give themselves, yes, but, I need them.
These are precious lives.
Yes.
Yes. I'm really
caught in a bind here.
It's such a weird thing for you too, because this idea that there was stock, there was cattle, and the life was brought to you, right?
Yeah.
But there was a huge amount of it. It was easily controlled and maintained. And there was never this idea that you would go hungry. Like, you were lower caste level, so you were fed every 2 weeks. You were fed when you needed it. But it was just when you were starting to think about food, right? You weren't hungry that first day. You were getting hungry. That next day, you would have been, you know, in pain. But it wasn't like you were being starved, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's weird to think about food as something that you have to be careful with. It's also weird to think about food as individuals, which is what you're doing.
Mm-hmm,
you're thinking about them and interacting with them as people now, and that's strange for you.
Yeah, they are still beneath me, though.
Yeah. Oh no, definitely.
Yes.
You know, and you encourage them literally placing themselves beneath
right.
you. So yes, you want to underline that
fact. I'm going to levitate above.
Right.
Right. So do you want me to roll on the journey to the ruins?
So
of Sephora?
What's the plan? You're just going to keep heading south?
Yes. What we're going to do is we're going to continue on and about. When we see the ruins of Sephora, and before we actually get into the ruins, I want to be sure I'm going to try to life detect into the ruins. And then what we're going to do is before we go in there proper, we're going to find a spot where we can suit up in all of our armor. We're going to don our armor,
totally.
Don our weapons, and we're going to enter the ruins, see what we can do to turn it into a base of operations so we can launch our raids.
I'm so focused. All right. I would like you then
yes.
to... So what are you doing during this journey? Are you just thinking and considering and are you doing anything active as well?
That's a great question.
As well.
As we're riding along, I mean, like you were saying, I can't spend too much time in one skin or another, otherwise I get these weird feedback loops and I freaking hate that's annoying. So I'll rotate between the Sun Elves and Sigma. And what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to life detect, and then I'm also trying to I know I have to focus on the actual riding, but if it's a lot of trudgery, I'm gonna try to especially if I know that Enid was some kind of healer. I want to focus on, I'm trying to discover my innate magical abilities,
sure.
this pool of magic that
sure.
I, oh, there we go, I'm sorry.
So,
this pool of magical abilities.
Are you going back to Enoch? Are you going back to Enid for that? Are you going to go back like as far, so you're kind of riding along, right? And it's, you know, it's most of the day is just, most of the night is just this kind of like swaying back and forth riding, just quiet. Not a lot of talk, not a lot of chatter, plenty of time to think.
You know what I really want to do is I just want to, during that time, I imagine my character Sigma looking up at the stars and seeing strange constellations there.
Yeah.
I mean,
And they're brilliant. I mean, on a clear night, you can see everything. There's no artificial light here. There's no pollution.
Seeing the sand dunes. I just want to paint that picture of the caravan of giant hyenas tiptoeing its way through the dunes toward this gigantic ruin.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that imagery, that atmosphere there. Trying to ponder what pools of magic I have access to since my birth.
Let's imagine it's the third night.
Okay.
This is the third night of travel, and your thoughts are beginning to slip more and more into this, you know, ethereal kind of realm, right?
Right. I mean, I'm kind of drifting to the sand.
Yeah. And so, like, and as the nights have been going on, the moon has been getting fuller and fuller. And on this third night, this crystal clear night, the moon is so very full. And you hadn't really paid attention to this before, but there is a very bright and flickering star in the sky, this pale green dot that seems to glow brighter than anything else. And you've also begun to notice it during the day too. So that's odd. That's something you definitely hasn't seen. That is something you definitely have not seen before. In addition, the moon in its fullness is almost overwhelming, almost oppressive, almost feels like you want to get out from underneath it.
Ayus, do you watch me now?
Do you think in your head or do you say it out loud?
I say it out loud.
Okay. I would like you to roll.
As Enid.
Yeah, okay.
Do
as
you
Enid.
Watch us now, Ayus? Yeah. You want me to roll something?
I would like you to roll a d20.
13.
Okay, so you say that and you all kind of crest this ridge, this particularly large dune. And on the other side of it is a salt flat that stretches out beyond the horizon. This perfect flat brittle salt fat. Salt flat. And Urels have never seen one before, so they kind of hold up, and Azari approaches and taps with his spear this thin layer of salt that, again, just stretches out everywhere. And as he taps it and punches through it, there's water beneath it. And it's teeming with small microscopic life.
It's teeming with life.
Teeming with life.
How deep is it?
So the water right now at the edges.
How would we know? Yeah.
Yeah. At the edges, it's like a couple feet. Maybe. Maybe even half a foot.
I dismount.
Okay.
And I go to the salt water. And I want to see if it's warm. I mean, I imagine it's been baked by the sun.
It's very warm.
So it's still warm.
Yeah, quite warm.
Yeah, and I want to see. So is this, I want to know if, I want to be able to, let me see, perception.
Sure.
Okay, 10 plus 14.
Okay.
What I'm trying to determine is if this is a layer of salt over the top of a gigantic ocean, like a body of water.
Sure.
Or if this water is just like a puddle and then it's the rest of the salt. I'm trying to get a closer look at this.
It definitely continues for a while. So it certainly seems like a thin layer of salt, maybe a couple inches over a body of water. You're not quite sure how deep it gets. It seems to be rather shallow for a while. So it could just be a large, shallow body of water, but there's definitely water under all of this salt. Whatever this salt is, it is forming on top of the water.
Okay, then what I want to do is I want to call for a clay jug.
Okay.
I want to scoop up some of this salt water and make sure I get some microbes in there.
Sure.
And where my mind is thinking is pretty devious. I'm thinking of if these are more corruption and diseases and I am immune to them, I can cover my body in them.
Okay.
And be like a walking CDC nightmare for my enemies.
Okay. So you start to collect
some of
this water.
So I just want to collect some of the microbe water.
Sure.
I don't
some
know
of the microbe water. No.
Dark. Okay, whatever.
The super salty, the super alkaline microbe water. You've been to collect it. As you do, you kind of like look out over this wide, flat area, and there's a shimmer in the distance, and you can just barely make out a person. Some humanoid.
I ask my stay here, my warriors.
And they're all tense, and Azari does not want to stay here, but does. But you can read their, at this point you can read all their surface thoughts easily. You don't have to try.
Yes.
It is available to you. Azari is worried, but agrees. Asonia is concerned, but agrees.
So what I'm going to do is I'm going to don my armor.
Okay.
I'm going...
Well, they put their armor on you. The second you move for it, they move to help
okay,
you.
So
yeah.
I don my armor, yep. And I have a weapon, and it is under the stars. I want to... how strong is the... Am I going to punch through this layer of salt if I walk on it?
It's a good question. As you think that, just as you think, will I punch through this salt? Can it support me? Asari ties the plating over your calves and feet and ties it around the back of your ankles, kisses both of your boots, and then rises to meet you.
Thank you.
Now,
I don't know what to say.
Right, what would you say, right?
Remain silent after something like that.
Absolutely. And they just go and then they both kind of step to the side and like open their arms to gesture towards the salt flats in front of you. What do you do?
Okay.
And then, what are you right now? Who are you wearing?
Sigma.
Okay, excellent.
I am going to shuffle my tentacled ass toward the potential mirage there. And what I want to do is I want to detect life. Is this a live thing or is this a mirage?
Sure. Yes, there's life.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's strong and also pale. It's weird. It's like it's an incredibly strong life, but it also feels like a pale version of it. Like it's not all of it. Like maybe it's just a reflection of that life. You're not sure.
Okay. My instinct is to go, this is Ayus. Okay. Ayus is watching us now. But I don't want to say that to the warriors.
Sure.
So I will walk augustly toward this life.
You put your first, like what? Okay, so your legs are what? Are they like this kind of thin, spindly, kind of like long-toed feet? What are they? What do you have on, like, what are your legs?
I've never seen Mind Flayer legs.
I know, me neither. So are they legs? Is it more of like a snake thing? Do you have more like what a squid would have? Or are
Let's
you like
Google
a,
image it real quick.
Okay, hang on. Wait, I'm going to pause real quick. All right, so you have legs. They're narrow, much like the rest of you. This kind of like extra thin, tall.
And they're in boots right
now.
I mean, they're in weird ass boots.
Are you wearing weird ass boots?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I wouldn't.
Do you wear shoes most of the time?
Yeah, I wouldn't go barefoot, would I?
I don't know. Like, what does your like are shoes something your society does? Like,
well, I mean, I imagine the sand would be super hot.
It'd be super hot, right?
Without them.
Okay, good. So that would make sense. So you step down onto this salt thing, and you feel it crunch beneath your boot, right? Which would be so weird for you to wear because you've never worn them before. So it just crunched down beneath this boot, but you don't step all the way through it. You're able to walk on top of this, of the surface of this salt.
Okay, and yeah, I want to walk toward the life.
Okay.
And I see.
All right, so, you know, crunch, 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 crunch. And you walk for, I'd say about 5 or 6 minutes.
I watch my contingent grow to like a faint dot in the dunes behind me.
It starts to grow to a dot. This starts to get larger. Wind begins to pick up around you. It starts to blow some of the salt around. It stings your eyes. You have to keep bringing a hand up, you know, to guard. No, I'm sorry. You would have those goggles they built for you.
Okay.
So at some point, I guess you just flip those down to protect your eyes.
Okay.
All right. And you're just kind of walking through this wind and sand that gets stronger and stronger.
Okay, walking through the wind and the sand that's getting stronger and stronger, and I've got to try to shield myself against it.
Yeah, well, it's something, because as you're getting
How far away is the...
I'd say you're now about, like, 200 feet. There's this pillar of pale light that seems to shine upwards from in front of you and reach towards the moon above. Mm-hmm. And there's this glowing in the sand as it swirls around, and this salt and sand that's bitter and stinging is almost completely obfuscating this light as it swirls around it.
All right, unafraid, I will continue on and call out, Ayus, do you watch us now?
All right, excellent. So I would like you to roll a constitution save, and you have to roll yours.
Okay, so 9.
Okay, so it gets to the point where you can't fight against it any longer. You're about maybe 20 feet away, and you're grasping and reaching towards this light, but you've just now fallen to your knees, and the wind is whipping at you, and you feel it kind of sting and bite into your flesh. It's eating at the corner of your goggles and getting into your eyes and making them water. Mm-hmm. What do you do?
I want to change then into Oris. He's a little more fit for this kind of a thing, and I'm going to try to stand again, and this time I'm going to activate one of my channel divinity abilities. It's called Conquering Presence.
Nice.
So taken aback by this kind of game, I'm going to stand, clench my fists, and I know I just changed into Oris. I'm actually going to change right back out of it. Like, no, I can do this as my original form.
Okay.
And activate what I call what is called the Conquering Presence. So as an action, I force any creature of my choice that I can see to make a wisdom saving throw.
Okay.
On a failed save, the creature becomes frightened of you for 1 minute. But what I'm trying to do really is I'm trying to roll intimidate. I'm trying to intimidate what I know is what he thinks really strongly is Ayus.
Right.
So Conquering Presence to try to intimidate. Do we roll intimidation?
Yeah, I would roll intimidation. I like that.
Okay. 19.
That didn't count. You dropped. No, it doesn't count.
Okay.
No, okay. It's fine. It's fine. 19 plus what?
Plus 6.
19 plus 6 is 25. Okay.
To intimidate.
Ha. All right. So there is the wind just dies. You're standing up to fight against it.
Ayus!
And it just dies. And then there's just this perfectly clear night. This, you know, sand and salt kind of falls in a rain around you as the winds just collapse. And there's this young boy, probably about 8 or 9, human, but pale, much like your elves, but without the red-rimmed eyes. And it's a different kind. It's not really pale. It's more like ivory. It's more like if his flesh was made of the palest ivory, but could move and dance. And he's just like one of the most beautiful creatures you've ever seen in your life. And he's just standing there.
He's within 30 feet?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Does he have to roll the wisdom save? No, yeah, maybe not. He's a conquering presence. That's fine.
Yeah.
That was the intimidation thing.
Yeah.
I will just simply nod, you know, and agree. Like, I'm glad you turned that Thanks for turning the shower off. I appreciate that. That's real nice.
So you have been watching us journey across this desert.
I am Sigma, 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 Sigma.
You have guided the Sun Elves in your previous life across this desert. And I call out your name. I seek your temples to ask you a few questions. But it is good to make your acquaintance.
As I like fumble with a greeting, right?
Sure.
So this is a creature that I know. I'm a little more confused. I don't know if I'm trying to, because remember I was like, are all gods like this? Do
right.
all the gods feel like they're this isolated, weird thing? So
sure.
unsure how to act, and I'm kind of frustrated with myself because of it, but...
Maybe Ayus just needs a friend.
Maybe. I'm going to just, in my mind flayer form...
Sure.
Pleasure to meet you.
And the little boy just kind of looks up at you, head kind of tilts to the side. And they point and just point off to the south and the west. Sorry, off to the south and the east.
I do not look away.
Right.
Instead, I want to ask.
Do the old alliances hold firm?
Puts their left arm down that they're pointing with. Extends their right arm and there's a branch just in their hand. It seems to almost fall out of their sleeve. And they begin to draw in the sand in front of you. And as they draw, the pictures kind of almost come to life. So it draws a circle, and then sand falls away from that circle, and a moon rises out of the desert, this tiny moon, and begins to turn in front of you. Then they draw lines and contours in the sand, and it begins to form into the edge of Khaogun, and the planet begins to rotate, like rise up out of the sand, rotate, and then rotate back into
yes.
the sand. You're just seeing that part where the moon touches.
Strikes it, yes.
And then begins to draw other things, and you see the temple to Sephor. You see a little bead, like a couple animals kind of dance about. You see a pig that turns into a giraffe, that turns into a seal, that crashes it back into the ocean waters. There's all these like weird little things that you're being shown. And then they put the stick down firmly into the crust of the planet and flick it backwards, and time rotates backwards. And then you see the moon, and then you see directly beneath the moon, you see this like flower that is all flowers, all petals,
yes.
all, you know,
thorns,
leaves, all
vines,
thorns, all vines, everything,
branches.
Every bit of life for this flower exists in one moment.
Yes.
And there's a connection. And then there's a shattering, and then the earth kind of rotates back to where it is. And you see the moon and you see the flower, but they're separated.
You speak in, or don't speak in, riddles.
They draw a box around them in the middle of the air as they're facing you. So in between you and them, they've drawn an outline, this tall, thin rectangle. And gold traces it through the air until it becomes a frame. And then inside the frame, a mirror appears. You can see through the mirror to see them, but you also see your own reflection over them in the mirror.
I wish to aid you, and I wish for your aid as well, and I wish for answers, but I cannot promise them immediately with these riddles. I may call on you, you may call on me, but before I leave tonight, please answer me plainly at least one question.
What am I, the arisen god?
As you ask that, you start to notice that the sand is shifting. So now you're looking into the mirror, and you're seeing them behind the mirror, through the mirror, right? And the sand around them is shifting and writhing and beginning to be kicked aside until it's this mass all around them. And then snakes begin to burst from the ground all around them. It's just piling on top of each other, filling everything you can see in front of you, and then you feel something grasp at your foot.
Mm.
And you look down, and dozens of snakes are winding their way up their legs.
I'm gonna levitate.
Okay.
If I can, to get out of the way of this.
You go to levitate. I need you to roll a, we're gonna do a strength.
Ooh.
I rolled a natural one.
Oh, four.
So you do pull away.
Okay.
Now, there are 24 snakes already on you. And so you pull away, and you're kind of raising up, and they're, you know, quickly crawling up your body. And I'm assuming you're, like, pulling them off and throwing them
throwing
to the ground.
Them down.
Right. So one of them.
What treachery is this? Yeah,
one of them wraps around your throat and then slides in between your tendrils. So
gross!
It's like it becomes like one of your own tendrils, and it kind of begins to merge into your face as its mouth comes around to your ear, hisses in your ear, and says, This show was produced and edited by Dead Ghost Productions. Find out more about us and all the shows we make at deadghostpro.com.